From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Syrian government began an aerial assault on the rebel-held region of eastern Ghouta in mid-February. That assault continues, and so far more than 700 civilians are estimated to have been killed, and more bodies are being pulled out of the rubble each day. The UN Security Council had issued a 30-day ceasefire in late February, but it has failed to take hold. As of Monday, the International Red Cross confirmed that it had successfully sent in a convoy of aid to help people who are trapped. But according to the World Health Organization, the Syrian government had ordered nearly three-quarters of all medical supplies to be stripped from the convoy. The Syrian government's media outlet Sana'a has blamed rebel groups for the civilian death toll, saying, quote, "The terrorist groups in Ghouta are still preventing civilians from leaving, even with ambulances and transport buses waiting on the other side of the safe corridors." So far, the Syrian government claims it has retaken about a third of the territory of eastern Ghouta from anti-government rebels. We turn to Rahul Mahajan, who is the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, as well as The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He also teaches sociology at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and he is our U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent. Welcome back to the program, Rahul.
Great to be with you again, Sonali.
So why Eastern Ghouta? How do you describe who it is that is actually or has been in control of that region? And how do you explain why the Syrian government is attacking it?
So the map of Syria is confused and constantly evolving. But Eastern Ghouta, which is on the suburbs of Damascus, has been an area of strong support for the rebels since basically the beginning of the civil war. So this is the area that was hit by the Syrian government in the famous chemical weapons attack of 2013, violating what Obama had said was a red line, but turned out to be no kind of line at all. So it's been an area that the regime has been opposed to and has been wanting to put down for some time. But now, as other strategically vital places have been taken, Homs several years ago, Aleppo a year and a half ago, they're turning their attention to the two of the remaining areas, one of which is Idlib province and the other is Eastern Ghouta.
So the attack since mid-February has claimed the lives of hundreds of civilians. And this is, of course, a point of contention the Syrian government claims, as do some of its supporters and backers here in the U.S., that it is the rebels that are preventing civilians from leaving. And, of course, most everybody else says that civilians are trapped in the area and being bombarded from the sky. What can you tell, as far as you can tell, who is responsible for the civilian deaths?
Well, we should be used to this kind of story. I mean, when the United States started its all-out assault on Fallujah, the second one in November of 2004, what did they say about the population of Fallujah that remained? There was at least 50,000 civilians left in the city at the time. They said, well, the militants are keeping them from leaving. The militants are using them as human shields. Every sort of hostile power that's going to use an aerial bombardment makes the same claims, all right? And the exact degree of truth of it is something that nobody can determine precisely, and that anybody else can easily contest. There are certainly reports that the organization that the Syrian government, the Russians, et cetera, are particularly sort of invoking, especially as justification for their violating the UN ceasefire, which is Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, is actually minimally present in Eastern Ghouta. Certainly, Eastern Ghouta is one of the places, as I said, where rebels were strong for a long time. So you had other organizations that preceded the rise of Nusra and its various kinds of reincarnations, the latest being Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. So I don't know how to evaluate these different claims, but at least there is a credible claim from Syrians in Eastern Ghouta that, in fact, this group that the United States government has put on its terrorist list is actually not there present in significant numbers. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are people, there are armed people in Eastern Ghouta, and of course, that's the reason that the Syrian government is bombarding the hell out of a place with 400,000 people in it.
Now, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is a London, UK-based organization and has for years been tallying civilian deaths in general, has made that claim of 700 deaths. They are, you know, presumably scouring local reports and as many sorts of sources as they can. Are they? I mean, you know, I know that they've come under some criticism, but do you take them seriously as a fairly impartial reporter of civilian deaths?
You know, a few years back, I felt that the Syrian Observatory was actually probably exaggerating deaths of the Ba'athist forces, and it seemed like they presented a much more even view of the conflict than seemed likely, and then other groups like the Violations Documentation Center did. So that would seem to be a bias on the other side, if anything. It's very hard to say, but these are incredibly plausible numbers.
Now, of course, whenever you have these kinds of horrific attacks, especially by governments, there are calls here in the United States to do what, you know, the leftist supporters of Bashar al-Assad have been warning against, which is, let's go and attack the Syrian government. That's exactly what the editorial board of Bloomberg did on Sunday, put out a editorial saying Trump should draw a real red line in Syria. And the call is the U.S. should just go in and bomb the Syrian government because of what it's doing in Eastern Ghouta. What do you make of these calls?
I think that these are very low stakes calls that are being made. I think everybody knows that no significant U.S. action is going to be taken, as in fact, significant action has not been taken in Syria since the beginning of the civil war. Yes, there are some minimal and often comic opera attempts to support and even create rebel groups. There's been some provision of arms, but aside from a few skirmishes that Trump started pretty much apropos of nothing, there's been no direct U.S. involvement against the Syrian government since the beginning. There's no reason to think that's going to change. Obviously, the United States had more significant involvement in the war against ISIS, which was also taking place in Syria. But, you know, sort of analytically speaking, it's useful to separate the ISIS war from the Syrian civil war. There are some overlaps, but they're basically two different kinds of conflicts.
Right. And does it seem to you that this particular assault on Eastern Ghouta, the timing of it, has anything to do with this declaration of victory against ISIS?
So some people on the left in the United States and elsewhere who have been more or less propagating some line of Syrian government and Russian propaganda, whether they realize it or not, have seized on this to say, look, now ISIS, which is one of the big opponents of the regime, is defeated. It is free to go after others. But in fact, ISIS was never a significant opponent of the Syrian regime. It was a much bigger opponent of the opponents of the Syrian regime in the more or less, you know, this large inchoate opposition that runs the spectrum from moderately secular to fairly Islamist. So I don't think so. I think that the timing is simply that things are winding down. The United States has made it clear that the most it's going to do is a little bit of brinksmanship with Russian military and no significant intervention. And so the regime is mopping up.
What responsibility does the United Nations bear? I mentioned the ceasefire, which of course wasn't respected, and there have been some reports, local reports, that that Syrians are wrapping the bodies of the dead in UN, a fabric, using the United Nations logo as shrouds to call attention to the inaction by the United Nations. But how much can the UN do?
So yeah, on the other side, many of them on the left, partisans of the Syrian resistance have been putting forward this line that the UN is fundamentally complicit in this. But of course, what exactly is the UN? The various bureaucratic bodies that take their direction from the member states. Yeah, you can say that they are. When they try to engage with the regime and get the permission to send humanitarian convoys, that they're helping put a humanitarian face on the attack, but I don't really know what their alternative is. So they try to bring in supplies. Those supplies, of course, then can be blocked, misappropriated, whatever, by the Syrian government and occasionally by some forces in the Syrian opposition as well. This is exactly the situation of relatively unarmed and relatively powerless humanitarian forces in a bloody internecine war. So I really don't know what these organizations could do differently. They seem to be certainly denouncing the crimes of the regime in no uncertain terms.
Meanwhile, of course, the assault continues, and where will it stop is the question. The Syrian government seems determined to decimate the rebel forces that are holding on to eastern Ghouta. They're claiming they have retaken a third of the territory already, but at what cost, right? I mean, we're really the reports that are emerging from the ground of the civilian death toll are absolutely horrifying, Rahul.
I mean, you can see aerial photos. Eastern Ghouta is starting to look like Aleppo, and like Homs before it. And we've already seen the way the Syrian government wages war, which involves mass aerial bombardment and artillery shelling of civilian areas and civilian buildings, along with the Russians and Iranians, frequently preferential targeting of hospitals and aid and relief. Starvation and use of selective use of food and military and medical humanitarian aid to try to control populations or induce them to give up. Every single thing you can think of that has been, classified as a violation of the laws of war, the Syrian government is doing. And in the absence of anybody stopping them, and there is nobody stopping them except the relatively forlorn rebel forces on the ground, they're going to prevail.
There was an interesting piece by Lubna Marie, who is a Syrian photojournalist and a refugee currently seeking asylum in the US. She wrote a piece in Al Jazeera, which I think is an important piece for us progressives here in the United States to pay attention to, called The Problem with Leftist Myths About Syria. And she's called out several people who have, who are big figures on the left who seem to feel that any claim about the Syrian government engaging in an assault that impacts civilian is an exaggeration or a lie. And it does seem as though that is a very, that's very difficult to reconcile with progressive positions on social justice and human rights issues overall.
I mean, look, Robert Fisk has actually interviewed rebels in Ba'athist custody, presumably people who've been tortured, and then presented those things as actual journalism. Seymour Hersh has peddled this ridiculously fabricated conspiracy theories about anybody but the Syrian government engaging in chemical weapons attacks against the opponents of the Syrian government. I mean, I've never seen a situation in which people are so ready to claim that the rebels are attacking themselves instead of being attacked by the people who, are their enemy. Even people like Chomsky. I don't follow him routinely on this because he doesn't have anything particularly interesting to say about Syria, but I've certainly seen things, they may be picked out of context, in which he has, for example, justified Russian intervention in Syria on the grounds that they're there at the invitation of the government, which, by the way, is exactly how the United States justified its intervention in South Vietnam. As suggested, you can't see real journalism from rebel-held areas because of the danger to journalists, which may be true in some cases, but how can you expect to see real journalism from government-controlled areas? You see reports from people saying, yes, in Damascus, people are very much against the rebels and support the regime. What do you expect them to say, and who are they? It is a civil war. There are two sides. But so how do you expect to think that talking to somebody in Damascus who knows that the Syrian Mukhabarat is everywhere is going to give you some idea of what's really going on? So yeah, it's really kind of shocking. It's a little bit like the Spanish Civil War, where also you had large chunks of the left just transmitting just outrageous propaganda about what was really going on.
And of course, the sense is that if we cover this as a story, we're somehow calling for U.S. intervention against the Bashar al-Assad regime. You and I have been, very clear in critiquing the disastrous results of U.S. Intervention in countries like Iraq. You've written two books about it. I wrote a book about Afghanistan, and yet you and I will probably still be accused of wanting the U.S.-backed regime change in Syria simply because we're covering this as a story.
Yeah, and despite proclamations starting with Obama, the United States has never had a coherent regime change policy in Syria, and the Syrian uprising started, without any U.S. meddling. It was part of a wave of revolution spreading across the Arab world. The Syrian people, at least the majority Sunni population, were very much on one side, and early on, there were even Alawites who were on the same side. To sort of try to suggest that this is like Iraq, where the people actually opposing the regime were almost all exile groups that had operated clandestinely and were not a mass uprising. It is completely different. And whatever you think is the upshot of telling the truth about what's going on, the first consideration should be to tell the truth about it. If you think that the truth means that the United States must intervene, well, that doesn't make the truth any less true.
Well put, Rahul, and a good note to end on. I thank you as always for joining us, and I know we'll have you back on to talk about more foreign policy issues. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Rahul Mahajan teaches sociology at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and he is the U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent for this program. We've been discussing the violence in Eastern Ghouta. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.